Hey, this is Charlie Starr from Blackberry Smoke, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
How you doing, everybody? This is Bobby Ingram from the group Molly Hatchet, and you're listening to Iron City Rock.
Hell yeah!
This is Kevin Kinney from Driving and Crying, and you're listening to Iron City Rock.
Welcome to episode 578 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 578, we have joining us two great bands. One for the first time, we have Mr. Kevin Kinney of the band Driving and Crying, who will be up in just a moment. And then we're joined by a band that we had on almost exactly a year ago, Parker Barrow. We were joined by Alex Bender last August, September, somewhere in that ballpark, who was a guitarist and musical director of the band. This time we're joined by husband and wife, Megan Kane and Dylan Turner, who are the lead vocalist and drummer, respectively, to talk about the band. So we'll get to Parker Barrow in just a little bit. Driving and Crying, a band that kind of arose out of the Georgia area in the very late 80s. Remember being on radio and getting the album with Fly Me Courageous, the aforementioned album Fly Me Courageous, and just absolutely loving the guitar riff and falling in love with the band around that time. They were in Pittsburgh to do a show with Lynyrd Skynyrd. They've been back once since. This will only be the third time that I can find that Driving and Crying has been in Pittsburgh. They will be in town on September 5th to do a show at the Thunderbird Cafe and Music Hall. That's a Saturday night show, so no reason for that not to be packed. So we wanted to find out what's been going on with Driving and Crying. So we had a chance to sit down with Kevin Kinney, the man who writes all the music and has been in the band since its inception. They've got a brand new album out in music terms. It was out in March of 2026. It's called Crushing Flowers. So we're going to play you a song from that album. This song is called Mirror, Mirror, and then we're going to get into the interview with Mr. Kevin Kinney.
Of the sun playing on the waterfront or out in the backyard when everything was simple, you didn't have a past. I know you're in there somewhere. I hope that feeling lasts. On your table, I know that they await in and out of memories, in and out of years. I know you're in there somewhere. I see see it in your tears. I know you're in there somewhere, the echo in your eyes. Yesterday is our living, clear and so alive. Maybe you remember me, it's possible you don't. I know you're in there somewhere, looking for the song.
Kevin Kinney of Driving and Crying. How you doing, man?
Woohoo! I'm doing great. Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
How's Pittsburgh today?
It is not raining and the sun is out, so we'll take it.
All right.
You know, anytime we can get a dry day, especially this August in Western PA, is a good thing.
Yeah.
You guys are rolling in September 5th to do a show for us. The Thunderbird got a new record. Relatively new. I'm a few months old at this point. Crushing Flowers.
Yeah, it's new for, these days it's new for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how that used to be, you know, if you didn't have an album out every 13 months, 30
right.
years ago, you were slackers. Now it's like, the new record
I
from
know.
2022. You know, anything post-COVID is new.
I know. We had like, we had 86, 87, 88. 89, 90, 91. We had like a lot right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember discovering Van Halen. I was like, oh my God, every year there's like literally you look at the copyright dates to know which ones to buy.
I know.
Like, you get an album for 6 years straight now. You know, if you get an album every decade, that's cool. Can you talk a little bit about this particular selection of songs? Are these kind of a going through the archives and pulling out some stuff, or did you guys write specifically for this record?
There's one old song on there that I wrote called Death of Me Yet, which is like this rock song I really like. That one's been around since the 80s, you know. The rest of it is all brand new. I wanted to sit down and write a Driving and Crying record for Driving and Crying fans. And I thought, you know, I could do one more album. You know, I'm running out of time. You know, I'm just, you know, 65 and, you know, I really want to, and I still feel really good and I can still tour. So we just did, we're doing like 60 shows in 80 days. So we're on a big tour. In a passenger van, a 15 passenger van like we are right now. Mm-hmm. And, I had this like, concept of, you know, the Crushing Flowers was one of the first songs I wrote. It was like break away from the engine, break away from the machine, which is kind of like disconnecting. You know, it's a manual of how to disconnect and make personal connections. Like, put your phone away for one day. You know, mm-hmm. your tablet, your phone. Get away from the internet. Read a book. Play a game, a board game with your wife. You know, and you know, go to the board game section at the store and pick one out and have fun. You know, so that's what I do. You know, and I just so that's kind of was the synthesis for this record was kind of like. And so we have a collection of different varieties of music, like Driver and Crying Fans, like about that was what, you know, all of our records have like some rock songs and then they have some folk songs and things like that. So I wanted to really balance that out. And then the second song I wrote was called Dead End Road, which is, I love that idea of that song because it's kind of about just keep on moving on and there's a path will open up somewhere in there. I learned this walking my dog. You know, she's like, well, she wanted to go down this path down this forest we were walking through. I said, I don't think I can go there. And then she kept pulling me. I was like, okay, must be something there. And then there was like another path that I didn't see that was hidden by its bushes. But, oh, well, okay, cool. She wants to go up there. So then, you know, when I thought about it, like I do, I wrote most of these songs walking my dog in the morning. You know, I get a lot of time to just concentrate and enjoy you know, clear my head and get out in sunshine and meet people. So that's just about keep on moving on. It's a, you know, Driving Crying is a quasi political self help group. That's kind of what we do. That's kind of our forte. We're not big on New Year's, we're not big for Halloween, but
yeah, I like that. It's a cool quasi political. It's a great way to think about it, and I love the diversity of the content in the music. Like you said, you've got rock, you've got folk. You know, you really
we always
have
yeah.
And you know, I noticed that going back through and listening to some of the stuff in the catalog earlier this week, and I was like, yeah, this had such a cool diversity. And one of the things I've noticed over the last couple years is your band gets mentioned, I think almost more than I had ever really realized it, by some of your peers. I'll hear, you know, members of the Black Crowes or some of these bands give you guys some love. And it's really kind of cool because, you know, you get the respect of your peers. Is that sometimes just as important to you as fans when you hear the band called out like that?
Yeah, you know, I think, well, you know, they're all friends of ours, and I think they feel our struggle. You know, we're the underdog. You know, we're someone who's been around 40 years, and we've never really made it. You know what I mean? It's like we had a brief success for one summer, which is, you know, not my favorite record, but it's a good record. And the Fun and Courageous one, I think it's a good record. But I mean, like Chris Robinson, one of my favorite people, great singer, you know, the Indigo Girls, and, you know, we're all in the same family, R.E.M., and I'm really proud of the family that I'm in from our Georgia, our little Georgia group, you know, Collective Soul, R.E.M., you know. And I buy their records every time they come out, and I'm a big fan, you know. So, it's very validating. And Jason Isabel's, you know, the Sadler Vedder produced this record, who's in the 400 unit. And Sadler was in our band for a while. And so he did a really great job on this record, you know.
Yeah.
And Aaron Lee Chashin produced our last record before that. So, we were lucky enough to have Lauer Jomets from the Sergio Simpson's Johnny Blues Guy. He was with us for almost 10 years, I think. So, he's gone back with them. So, man, it's really great. You know, we get a lot of love from some super quality people, and I think they just embrace the fact that we're different, you know, and we're just happy being different. Like, we're not.
Yeah.
Looking for that, like, I'm not looking for someone to be a fan, or, you know, I just, if you buy 50 records or 20 records, just make me one of them. I just want to be on the dance floor. I'm not trying to win the contest. Just give me a listen. You know, I'm different. I sing weird. I have a really weird voice. If I could hire a lead singer 40 years ago, I would have, but I could figure it out. So, you know, there's one more person to pay. So.
Yeah, Kevin, think about it this way. At least you were able to get along with your singer. That's the key. I mean, how many guys write great songs and at this stage of their career, you're suing each other or he's got his own band ripping off the songs you wrote.
That's true. Yeah. See,
you may not be Rob Halford, but hey, you can get along with you.
I'm happy to be me. Yeah. But that's what I love about everybody. Like there's so much great music out there and I love all these home studios and people who have bands that just pop up out of nowhere and the people who have one hit wonders. I love one hit wonders. You know, people who just make one really great song. That's like the bubblegum era, you know, it's like, 1910 Fruit Gum Company and stuff like that. I love one hit wonders kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, I know.
People have made careers as well. I mean, I think, I would love to be, other than the person that wrote Happy Birthday, the person that wrote Walking on Sunshine from Katrina and the Waves. I don't know personally who that is, but that person will never work a day in their life.
Yes.
You did it. You've hit the brass ring on the first try. You don't need a second song.
Exactly.
Just license the shit out of it.
Yes.
So I get it. So, absolutely. The tour you're doing, as far as, do you guys do different sets? I mean, 60 shows in 80 days, that's an insane amount to try to do a vastly different set list every night. How do you guys do you guys have sort of a core, you know, we'll do these 12 and sprinkle in a couple here and there, or do you stick to kind of a single set list?
We have five songs that we have to play. Fun and Courageous, My Circle Blue, Build a Fire, Straight to Hell. Everything else is from our catalog. So that's our drummer, Dave Johnson, and our bass player, Jim Nilsson, and our new guitar player, John Harris, they have to know like 120 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And we pull from that. Like we just did five shows in a row and no tour were anywhere near alike. They were all different. Last night started off acoustic. Some of them started with instrumentals. So they all started different. They all kind of went, you know, I really read the room and I'll ask people, you know, like, what do you want to hear? And if I run into people before the show, I'll say, you know, what do you guys want to hear? Or so I kind of, but also, you know, like I was telling my guitar player, John, the other night, I was like, I read the t-shirts that are in the front row, I can kind of tell like, okay, there's three dudes over there with Kiss t-shirts on. I think I should rock it out. Or, you know, there's a Jason Isbell t-shirt, a Todd Snyder t-shirt. Okay, maybe I'll do a little folk thing for these guys tonight. You know, so, you know, I try to make it interesting for myself, the band members, the crew, the audience, so nobody gets bored, you know, like, we don't even make set lists. We just wing it, you know, that's our skill set. And, you know, so, you know, I used to do set lists in the Blind and Courageous years. Mm-hmm. And I wound up like daydreaming.
Yeah.
So I knew this song came up to that and this song came up to that. And then I couldn't wait to get to that song. And once I knew I went to that song, then I knew I was almost done. And you know, it's just like, I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to play every song because I want to play it at that moment. And you know, like if you can't sell it, you know, no one's buying it, you know, and I want to be able to sell it, you know. I would get to that song and that set list where I was like, oh, I don't feel like playing that song, but everybody else we're ready to do it. And this light guy. And I was like, I'm never doing this again. I'm never playing Whisper Chains of Lion to this. Cause 4 hours ago I put on a set list and now I'm standing here and it's the total wrong song at this moment.
Yes.
But now I have to play it. And we don't have, and it's, you know, I do love seeing that in bands. Like I've seen, you know, like there's a band I loved called Nashville Pussy. They did the same set probably for 6 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I went and saw them every time because I kind of liked the fact that it was the same show every time.
Yeah.
You know, but for me personally, it's hard for me to do that.
Yeah, and you know those four guys in the Kiss t-shirts you were referencing want the exact same set list because they've seen the same set list with Kiss for 20 years. Do not deviate.
Yeah.
I mean, I obviously certain bands, I often wonder if it's kind of the curse of big success when you're in, you know, arenas and things and you've got video production and things like that, that there is choreographed to a click that you have to do.
Right.
But I love that, you know, give me Warren Haynes just playing what he feels like playing. And I think there's some
authenticity
to that. You know, I totally get where you're coming from. And for you to be engaged by it, I think is so important. You know, it's one thing for me. I may not have seen your band for 15 years, you know, but if you're showing up and you're enthused by what you're playing, that's irreplaceable. That's a wonderful thing. Yeah.
Well, I try to tell myself every show. Well, I don't have to tell myself, but I do. Before I play every night, I'm playing the show like I'm nervous, and I'm going to play the show like it's my first show ever. Like I'm so lucky to be here, and I play it like it's my last show. When I leave the stage, if that's the last show, like last night in Greeley, Colorado, if that's my last show, I'm good with that. You know, so I try to live up to that. I don't try not to have any drama. I try to be like, okay, you know, that's great. I just gave them everything. I told them my story, which is what I tell every songwriter. Like, just tell me your story. I think it'll be interesting. It's, you know, I'm not Jack White or Beck or, you know, anybody like that. You know, like I'm not trying to be anybody but me. I'm just me, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, hopefully like I said, if you go out 20 times and see bands or you go out, you know, a couple times a month, if you could just make come and see my band, you know, I think you'll see that it's different and it's, you know, a little interesting. Like I say, like quasi-political self-help, you know, I'm here to, you know, I write songs like Scarred But Smarter was the first song I ever wrote about me learning from my experiences of being, you know, making mistakes and being real. I have a song on the new record and the new tour called Mirror Mirror that I love playing. That's a song about Alzheimer's, you know, but it's like a pop song about Alzheimer's, you know. My mom has that, so I'm kind of working my way through those feelings, you know. So, I also want to be entertaining. There's also a song on there called Come On and Dance, which is just a fun song about when you're 16 years old and your dad and you get your friends over in the basement and you're, you know, have a little dance party. You know, that's all that is.
Absolutely. And it's all real
Spencer
stuff.
Spencer Light gift ball. Yeah, there's Spencer Light disco ball and all that stuff, you know. So.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, only the third time Driving and Crying has come through Pittsburgh. I just seen the other day the anniversary. It was 35th anniversary of the show you did here with Lynyrd Skynyrd. And I was like,
all right.
And it was right around the time that I started arranging this. And I was like, wow, these guys. So don't miss the opportunity for those listening.
I think we played there in like 89, maybe with the Screaming Blue Messiahs, maybe.
Okay.
I can't really remember.
Maybe it's a little older or it didn't make.
Maybe not.
Didn't.
But it's very rarely that we come there. So I'm really looking forward to. I think it's a beautiful city, you know. I love Pittsburgh. I've been there to visit. I have some friends there. One of my best friends is from there. So, you know, the poor Steelers. He's a big Steeler fan. So.
Yeah, that's kind of a given. It's in the water, I think, here. So, Kevin, I want to thank you so much again. The new record available now. We'll see you guys September 5th. Should be an incredible show. Thank you so much for your time today, man.
All right. Well, God bless and be well.
All right. The new album from Driving and Crying is called Crushing Flowers. It is available now, and the band is out on the road doing a bunch of shows in really all over the country. They've got a run of shows that include Pittsburgh, and that is on September 5th. They'll be playing at the Thunderbird Cafe and Music Hall. Like I said, this is only the third time I believe this band has been in this city. So do not sleep on the opportunity to get a chance to see Driving and Crying. Sounds like a really, really cool show. And I so enjoyed Kevin's authenticity in what he's doing and saying, you know, things like, it's important for him to enjoy the show, for you to enjoy the show. And that's often overlooked. Certain bands go through the motions. You've seen them before. You've seen bands go through the motion. Driving and Crying, certainly not one of those bands. The next band, with a great upward trajectory. They are just out on the road supporting the full-length release of their album, Hold the Mash. They're going to be in town on Wednesday, August 26th. So if you're listening to this show is either the day you're listening to it or maybe the next day, depending on if you download it right away. So don't sleep on this one. These guys, like I said, certainly an upward trajectory, remind me very much of Dirty Honey in what I see for this band down the road. If music had a crystal ball, I think you'd see Parker Barrow on the way up. We had a chance to talk to Alex from the band a year ago. They were in doing a show at, I believe at the time, it was the Club Cafe. This time we were fortunate enough to catch up with Megan and Dylan. As I mentioned at the top of the show, they are indeed married. Megan was on a path to become a country singer, and Dylan kind of took her in a different direction. And as you'll hear in just a moment, what a great thing that happened, because this is a really cool band. I think you're going to really enjoy them. So without further ado, we're going to get to that interview with Megan and Dylan of Parker Barrow. But first, we're going to give you a taste of their latest single, Blinded. And we'll get into the interview.
Decision!
Welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Megan and Dylan of Parker Barrow, who will be coming in to do a show on the 20th, let me sure I get the date right, 26th at Jergal's in Warrendale. Welcome to the show, guys. A pleasure to have you.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's great to get a chance to talk to the both of you. We spoke to Alex about a year ago as you guys were rolling in to do a smaller venue, the Club Cafe. This is obviously coming off the heels of your latest album, which is really, I think, a nice step forward for the band. Can you talk a little bit about, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Jukebox Gypsies, was Alex involved in the recording of that album or any of the writing, or was that done and released before he joined the band?
Yeah, so we released that record probably about 3 or 4 months before we met Alex.
Okay.
So that was done, Megan and I and our producer, Stephen McKnight, who okay. also we worked with on the new record as well. But
okay.
Yeah, so we met Alex just after releasing that record.
Okay. So I guess the obvious question then is you know, you have Will on guitar, Alex is kind of the musical director. How did that influence the writing for this material versus, you know, those of you folks who might have come out to see you a year ago off the heels of the Jukebox Gypsies record? How did the material grown, changed, et cetera, from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Jukebox Gypsies, you know, Megan and I, we wrote that record. Really, you know, it was the two of us, and while we both play a little bit of guitar, you know, mm-hmm. neither of us are guitar players as far as writing riffs and that type of thing. So with that record, you know, we kind of did our best to get the songs to a place where we could take them in mm-hmm. to our producer where they made sense and there was sort of a structure. You know, and our producer, Steven, was really able to kind of take those sketches and sort of color them in, you know, and mm-hmm. and kind of bring them, you know, to where they needed to be for Megan to go in and sing on them and bring those songs to life. You know, whereas with this record, with me and Alex writing it together, you know, we were able to collaborate in real time, sort of as inspiration struck, you know, being on the road.
Yeah.
You know, we're usually on the road like, you know, 10, 11 months out of the year. And, you know, being able to have those interactions where, you know, whether it started with a riff or with a word, mm-hmm. you know, if he had an idea that he brought to me, we could collaborate in real time and sort of flesh those things out. And I think that allowed us to have more of an identity to what we were doing, you know, going into the studio, which also really gave our producer the chance to sit back and produce, you know, yeah. and not be involved in writing the parts. And, you know, even on that first record, he played all the guitar, all the bass, all the keys,
right.
basically everything but drums. So, you know, with this, it really gave him a chance to kind of see it from, you know, a different, like, you know, 30,000 feet and kind of guide us and point us in certain mm-hmm. directions. So, yeah, just the camaraderie between me and Alex and that real time kind of, you know, partnership and doing that really allowed us to kind of open the floodgates creatively on this record.
Yeah, I imagine from a cohesive standpoint in a band, I mean, you guys are traveling in whatever you travel in, but I mean, you can't replace that. You look at how many bands have phenomenal records in their early days because they're all jammed together in a bus
yeah.
or a van or maybe if you're lucky an RV, and then success comes along and everybody gets their own bus and it starts to sound like that bleeds into the music. So you know, it's I think a noticeable step in the evolution of the band sound to have that in its DNA, as opposed, like you said, you have a producer and it's a little hard, I imagine, to be objective when you're kind of the chief cook and bottle wash of the music.
Yeah.
Megan, are you involved in the writing of the lyrics, or where did the lyrical content of this record come from?
Yeah, so Dale writes all the lyrics. Basically,
okay.
the way that it really works is that Dale will write lyrics, Alex will write riffs, and then we all three will get together and I'll kind of
Make it a song.
Make it a song and sing what I hear melody wise. Obviously, I think that's a you know, I Dill hear when he writes lyrics, he hears certain things. So he'll, you know, if I'm off, totally off base sometimes, he'll be like, well, I was hearing it more of this way, or I was hearing it more of that. So we'll kind of work together on the melodies and everything. And then once we get to the studio, then Steven and I really own in on note choices or changes or anything like that. So it's really an all over process and collaboration effort once the song's completed, but really I kind of, where I sprinkle what I do, that's normally found in the melodies and the I guess note choices.
does it help? I mean, obviously not to make too much of it, but you guys have a personal relationship being married. That you know, Dylan, you're writing lyrics that Megan, you can channel, because you know, a lot of great singers, I guess maybe the truly greats can sing anything, you know, and like Whitney Houston, who could sing songs she never wrote. But does it help that you guys are coming from really a union when it comes to the lyrical choices, and you know the instrument maybe as well as anybody, though, and you know, you live with the instrument?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, at this point when I'm writing lyrics, I am definitely hearing Megan's voice singing them, for sure. Another thing that really helps me and makes my job easy is I can write anything down on paper. As soon as she sings it, it sounds great. So, you know, it really makes things easy. But I do think that our shared experience and sort of the kindred spirit that we have always felt towards each other goes a long way in that. And, you know, while sometimes we may not hear the same thing or hear it the same way, that's almost the beauty in it, is where the two things mesh and become something new.
Sure.
Where it's nothing that I could have ever thought of, it's nothing that she could have ever thought of, but together it's this new creation and new thing. So I definitely think, you know, it's a neat, you know, aspect of our situation and our process and how things work. And I think it is something that makes our band, you know, somewhat unique to some of the other stuff that's out there.
Yeah. Megan, you, if my knowledge is correct, had kind of started out in pursuit of a career in country music. Was this a difficult thing to make this? I mean, because country's so commercial and you know, obviously there's a million singers in the country space right now, but the ones that make it, make it.
Yeah.
Was that a difficult decision to go into rock, or did it feel very natural for you?
I think I pursued country mainly because it's what I grew up with. I grew up in Alabama. So just being surrounded by it and also seeing the path. I felt like the path that country music is a lot clearer in a way when you're first getting started. There's steps you can take. There's people who can make you into a copy or a rebrand of something very popular. And there's a lot of clear paths when it comes to country music. And being a girl who, you know, moved to Nashville at a very young age and, you know, with a dream, I wanted to do whatever it took to make that happen. And if that was country music, then, you know, I would find a way to make that work. However, when I met Deal and he kind of opened my knowledge to the Southern rock scene or to the rock and blues and to soul and to all that, I definitely felt like it was a natural shift for me. With country music, I always felt like I was trying to be someone. Whereas with rock music, I feel like there is, since the path isn't as clear, you can make your own way a little bit. And I was able to kind of pull and discover this music that just hit me differently emotionally. It impacted me in a different way, maybe because I was older, maybe because it was something I discovered for myself, or Bill introduced me and I was able to like discover and love it for myself, versus it being just something that I was grown up with or anything, or told that I was supposed to pursue. So I definitely think that when I realized that there was a space like this that did exist, maybe the path wasn't as clear, or maybe it would be a little bit more difficult, but I definitely felt like it's where my voice fit and it's where I could maybe make my own way through as a singer and as a vocalist and as approaching fronting a band. So it was difficult in the beginning. It was a learning curve to learn how to front a rock and roll band coming from acoustic solo shows. But I definitely feel like it's exactly the path that I should have taken, and especially in the vocal, like just the instrument alone, my voice lends itself to it very naturally, and I feel it beyond comfortable in it. Now I would feel weird singing country music at this point.
if the checks are big enough, maybe. But yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at it, you know, I was kind of doing some looking into this, and when you think of Southern inspired rock, I don't but necessarily labeled as Southern rock, that's it's such a box to put it in. But really, you know, the kind of music you're playing, most of the bands that have achieved success with this are all relatively new. You know, look at like a Larkin Poe or a Grace Potter. You know, they're not, you're not trying to go out and recreate the Allman Brothers or, you know, the Black Crowes or some bands like that. You're really almost a trailblazer in that. And that's maybe kind of sad to say in 2026 that you're, you know, kind of at the, it's really an untapped genre of music. I mean, other than, you know, maybe you could say Janis Joplin, but I think her voice was, you know, she kind of transcended a label at all. But it is really refreshing and kind of a new spin on it. So it's kind of cool. As you guys are touring, I mean, you guys, like you said, you're doing 10 months a year on the road. Is most of this stuff written as you're touring, or do you guys just kind of put little notes in, you know, your phone, and then kind of just have a brain dump when you get home and unpack and get your laundry done and then start to write?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, between Alex and I, we're always working on something. You know, and there are times on the road, like I said, where we do get to have those moments where, you know, as we're being inspired, you know, we're able to work together and come up with something. But, you know, I think a big part of songwriting, at least for us, is just being in a position and in a posture to capture the inspiration when it strikes, however that may be. You never know when it's going to come or how it's going to come. But being ready when it does, just kind of being on your toes, and when it happens, having some way to document it. For Alex, you know, he brings a little mobile recording studio out on the road so that he can track things right there. And, you know, I'll spend a lot of time, you know, I have thousands of notes in my phone at this point,
with,
you know, things that, you know, 999 of them probably will never be a song. But you never know, you know, there's been plenty of times where I've written something down that never becomes a song, but it inspires a song 3, 4, 5 years later. So like I said, just trying to be, you know, ready for inspiration and just documenting as much as you can. And then, you know, when we do get home, we have a little, you know, I would hate to even call it a studio at our house. We just have a place where we can plug some things in and record, you know, to make some demos and sort of put a timestamp on where things are, where we're at, what we're doing. And, you know, really it all kind of gets finalized and finished up. We like to leave a little bit of room, you know, when we go into the studio for, you know, like what we say is like some of the magic to happen. So yeah, it's never really the same with us. We don't have like this set process or this is what we do, this is how we write a song. We just try to let the songs come to us as they are and be good stewards of them, and hopefully turn them around and get them out into the world, and you know, hope that they make people feel something.
Yeah, the one question I had, you guys released this as an EP and then later as an LP, adding additional songs. Was that, was there a particular reason, or was that just kind of to get the songs out there to kind of feature the full band quicker to the market, or what was the rationale behind the EP and then the, you know, relatively quick, the album to follow?
Yeah, it certainly, I wouldn't say for any of us, it was the plan. I think it, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to sit back and look at you know, where our world is at with music at this point.
Yeah.
We love the art of an album. We love, you know, having the sleeves and the artwork and the stuff that goes along with it. But we're also old school and not a lot of people care about that at this point. We will still do that for really our own sakes, and for those who do value it. But we kind of realized about halfway through last year that, you know, the album was taking a little bit longer than we had originally expected. And between touring and we went across, we went overseas last year for the first time and we were gone a lot. And so we record in Jersey. Our commute to there as well was just, it just, there was just a lot of figuring out last year, just trying to figure out how to get music out and what would be the most beneficial to the songs and to the band versus our own selfish reasons. And so we kind of had to come to grips with that. And, you know, I think it all worked out exactly how it was supposed to. We were able to release the EP at our last UK tour, which I think helped us a lot with going over there and get to come back, and then having the full album out on this last run to the UK definitely helped us a ton over there as well. So, you know, it's really just the nature of where we're at as a society and music consumption. It just is a little bit different. And although it may not be the way we prefer it, whatever gets the music into people's ears is what we're willing to do.
Yeah. It's become a very different market from, you know, with the dropping videos and, you know, it's, you've got to kind of do things certainly different than, you know, as I mentioned, Janis Joplin, you could not release albums the way they did then, or even, you know, even in the 80s, it's a very different process. You guys would have been $2 million in debt to make an album and spent 2 years touring to, and praying that it went triple platinum so you could pay the label off. So, you know, whatever makes sense financially and keeps the band moving in a forward trajectory, it's kind of fun to watch the snowball grow as it rolls down the hill. And that's, I think, what's exciting for fans is you could see the trajectory that the band is on. I look at a band like Dirty Honey as another band that kind of draws comparisons where we saw them come in and do these tiny little shows. And the next thing you know, they're in, you know, opening for the Black Crows and getting a huge pop when they come on stage. And, you know, I can see you guys taking a very similar path. So whatever works, keep doing it. It seems to be going great. So from a set list, just real quick, should we expect a pretty heavily into Hold the Mash for the current run of shows, or do you guys kind of mixing some of the Jukebox Gypsies into that?
Yeah, I mean, we always change it up. We try not to, you know, try not to play the same set two nights in a row. So we always will mix it up. We obviously do put a priority on the new stuff, as that's sort of what we're out promoting and everything. But, you know, you'll hear most of the record, I'm sure. You'll probably hear a cover or two, and you'll hear some Jukebox Gypsy stuff as well.
Awesome.
You know, it's we've had a cool experience, you know, over this past year of touring, where we've had people that will come out to 4, 5, 6, 10 shows in a row, you know, and follow us. And, you know, for those people, we try to give them that experience of, you know, it's new every night. And, you know, even if we were to play the same set, so much of what we do is improvise that you're never going to get the same thing twice at a Parker Barrow show. So, So, I mean, definitely expect to hear some of the new stuff, some of the stuff from Jukebox Gypsies, and probably a cover too as well.
Awesome. Well, Dylan, Megan, I want to thank you guys again. You're in town doing a show at Jurgles, a fantastic venue for you guys, August 26th, which is next week at this point. So we will see you in just about 7 days.
We can't wait. Thank you for having us.
All right. That about wraps up this episode of the Iron City Rocks podcast. Again, August 26th, Parker Barrow will be at Jurgles in Warrendale. Their new album, Hold the Mash, is out now. And you can also catch Driving and Crying on September 5th at the Thunderbird Music Hall. And their album, Crushing Flowers, is also available now. Two bands with that kind of great rock southern swagger. I don't know that I would call either band a pure southern rock. because it isn't quite the music I hear when I think of that term. But in some cases, I do. I lump these bands in, if I had to, with a band like the Black Crowes, which has got some of the Stones in them more so than the Allman Brothers. But judge for yourself, both fantastic bands. So I hope you go out and check them out. You can visit us to get more information at ironcityrocks.com. You can click on show 578. I haven't got quite to 700 yet. 578, get all the details of both these bands. We'll have links for tickets, the new albums, etc. And you can also check out other things going on, other episodes. Join us on social media. We are Iron City Rocks. Always giving away tickets, dropping information on new shows, reminiscing about old shows. Really enjoy interacting with the folks out there of this fine city and really all over the world. That's what's really cool is we get a lot of great people from Western Pennsylvania, but also a lot of great people from literally all over the world. We'll drop something in the comments. It's never unusual to see, oh, I'd love to see the show, but we're in Thailand, so it's not coming to us. So it's great to interact with people all over the world. Really appreciate it. You can also drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. There's a band you want us to check out. That's how we got turned on to Parker Barrow. So thank you for that. So until next time, thank you for listening.